Before we get started, I have a couple quick announcements. First, today, in the Delaware Call, we published a investigative piece. We partnered with NoCap on it, and it just talks about some of the history of Middletown and what Middletown did when 205 and 206 passed, the police reform bills. And if you read that, you'll figure out that, it's really on form for them. But keep up with the call, because we got tons of stuff going on with NoCap. We got tons of stuff sort of on the on-deck circle, so to speak. So keep watching that space. And if you like the stuff you see in that space, as promised, on Monday of this week, we started selling tickets to the Delaware Call Fall Classic. Barbecue, 19th century baseball, brass band at the Yorkland Center for Creative Arts. Saturday, September 27th. It's fucking dope. This is a third annual one. It's fun as hell. And you can support the Delaware Call. Tickets are $25. Hospitality tent with open bar are tickets and hospitality tent are $60. And all the proceeds, every nickel, goes to produce everything you see at the call. That's it. So that's what we're doing, and now we're going to do more of it. Maybe we'll do a tick, 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 tick. Oh, baby, it's not possible to leave it alive, to leave it alive. I guess it's not logical to say so. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. So we're going to we're going to follow up on the tax assessment, reassessment issue, okay? But we're going to do as thorough a job as we can, because I hope to never speak of it again. But the person with me is someone who his opinion is going to matter on this, and he's doing a lot of work on this, and it is Newcastle County Council member Brandon Toole. Hello.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming in. I was going to stick right to like the business end of this, but our masked producer tonight mentioned that you could possibly be my Newcastle County member, like my representative. I'm not positive, but I'd like to give a little background. Like, how did you get on city council? County council. What was your motivation? And yeah, just a little bit of background.
Sure, no problem. In 2015, Representative Michael Barbieri stepped down, and it went to special elections, similar to the 20th RD that happened yesterday. And there, you basically pitch your talents to the Democratic Party in the RD that you're in to run for that seat. So myself, along with Representative Bentz and three other members of the 18th RD, went out to, you know, pitch for our that seat. I wasn't selected, but and I do credit Mike David Bentz for this, that he invited everybody that wanted to be the state rep for the 18th to join the RD. And that happened in 2015, and I was the treasurer for that RD for 7 years before I decided to run for Newcastle County seat. I went after Jordan Pusey, and before I ran, I asked her if it was okay if I could run, or if she was going to run again. And so
you
I've
never,
been doing
never
that.
Ask her permission for anything. I mean, we don't even know her. We know not to do that. No, she's a huge friend of ours, of course.
So she gave me the green light, and I ran for that seat, and so I've been doing it since 22.
Cool.
And I am not your councilman.
No, now I realize that, because now I remember, and I probably only thought that because I don't know. I mean, you obviously know Jordan Pusey. You know, she never shuts up about anything, and so she's probably mentioned you so many times. I just assumed. We love you, Jordan. You're the best.
Yeah, we love you, Jordan. I live in Bear. Actually, I live about as far south in my district as you can get. And I go all the way up Maryland Avenue to the Little Caesars on Maryland Avenue, just south of the city. And so, and then through Ellesmere, I have the mall, I have the hospital.
Ellesmere and the mall and Little Caesars. That's why you're close. You're close.
I'm very close.
Yeah. Okay. I grew up right in that area, off of Maryland Avenue and Boxwood Road, by Banning Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up in the city of Newark, but my wife grew up off of Maryland Avenue too.
Oh, nice. Richardson Park kids.
That's right.
Okay, let's get into it. Enough of this foolishness. So, last week, I don't know if you heard, we did a small bit on the reassessment, and Jessica Rain and I took a sort of a contrarian view at the time, and then I realized we were right the whole time. But what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes, explain at a very high level where I'm at with this, what I think happened, what I think the fallout is, and that type of thing. And then you can kind of correct me if you disagree or if I misstate something, you tell me whether I'm wrong. Does that work?
Perfect.
Okay. So we haven't done a reassessment in decades, 40 years, on laws from decades before that. And we finally get down to doing a reassessment. A reassessment of the scale has to be done, for a certain amount of money using, whatever computing technology we have. And so we contract out with this group who are going to basically derive all the values for all the parcels of land. And then we're going to use those values to then run through the system that we have to get the tax. When those values get delivered to the school districts, they don't really have a lot of wiggle room about how they're going to figure the tax necessarily. There's only so much they can do. And what we found out is many commercial properties came in at a low valuation. And a lot, generally the average of residential properties came in high. Now, I do not want to talk about these one-on-one, people putting Google Street View comparisons and what they think. The thing is, I'm not doing that. I'm saying that, generally speaking, the commercial properties came in low, the residential properties came in high, so then when those values got passed over to tabulate the tax, the biggest percentage is going to fall on residential homeowners and property owners, not commercial corporate property owners. And so that's the problem people have. Do you agree with that sort of problem statement?
Problem statement, yes. So generally, the burden has shifted to the residential consumer. And the valuations of commercial properties have gone down significantly in some instances. And the problem that I see there, generally speaking, is the intensity in which we shifted this burden relatively quickly. We're talking 40 years of no reassessment to now, and we're seeing that fallout now.
Yeah, and I guess my concern is that rather than looking at this fallout and everything that's happened in the intervening years, and rather than saying, well, how did we even arrive at these figures? Many people are just getting almost conspiratorial about it. They're doing the thing that I said about this gas station in Pennsylvania isn't worth this one in Wilmington, or it's more or less, or they're making wild comparisons of this empty lot here is this, but this home is that, and we're talking about differences of $75,000 or $100,000, which or $200,000, which, again, it is something. It's not nothing. But there's a fundamental issue here, and we have to get to the bottom of it. How did we get these values? If are we Are we questioning the values, or are we saying that the values are accurate and we're just experiencing sort of growing pains because we haven't done this in four decades?
I think it's compounded with that issue of the 40 years. And I think 90% may be on target. And it's the remaining 10% that we're seeing the conspiracy theories that are coming out, or these wild comparisons, these one-on-ones. But overall, I think, like, if we looked at it from the global outlook of Newcastle County, I think most of it has just shifted over time. I did call with Councilman Tackett for an audit. I don't know what that audit looks like yet. And Tuesday, before we had our meeting in council, we met with Bob Wasserbach, who is the Newcastle County auditor, just to kind of pick his brain. I'm not an auditor. I'm not an assessor. I am still trying to understand the three approaches that Tyler used to establish these market values. And it's trying to figure them out and to figure out where, if anything, we made a mistake.
Yeah, I think that that's the important thing. And that is a great sort of segue into my next topic. I have mentioned on the show before, and I mentioned it on a Patrons Only episode last week, a lot of my career was spent doing basically batch testing and auditing of computer models for banks. So I wanted to give an example of something that people might be familiar with so they can understand what we're dealing with here. So everybody talks about their credit score. It's a proprietary model that's been developed over years and years and years. It's called FICO. Most people know that, Fair Isaac and Company. Banks have their own models, too, to figure out what tier they're going to put you in, what kind of pricing they're going to give you. They usually, FICO score is an input into that model, or usually it's a way to segment that model into particular risk segments. And it's not how good your credit is. It's your probability to default. And then within these segments, the computer will evaluate different sets of variables. How long you've had credit? How many trades have you had? How many accounts? Have you ever been delinquent? How recent have you been delinquent? Do you have credit that you're not using? All this stuff. And then they apply different coefficients and weights to come up with scores to get to a number that they feel comfortable using to give you credit. Now, many times I would get a phone call or an email from a loan officer or someone else saying, why is this person with good credit, that I'm looking at their credit report, why did they score X or Y or A or B? And we would go back and figure out, is there something wrong with the credit report? Is it not really what it looks like? Or is it the fact that we find some behavior there risky, even though with a human eye, you sort of understand it and you think, man, that's not risky. Or it is, and the model says it isn't. Maybe somebody has used a lot of credit and been delinquent, but the model says that's fine based on, I don't know, their income or how long they've had this, carrying these debts. The point I'm trying to make is, you don't fucking know how they arrived at these figures. I know everybody's a fucking expert now about, this company got this break and this company didn't get a break and this person didn't get a break. Nobody knows. We cannot. My problem with it is, and I wonder whether you can speak to this at all, we really shouldn't be talking about something until we do the audit. My suggestion, maybe you can speak to this, would be that somehow you should be able to identify this very few number of disputed cases, 5%, 10%, even less. Pick 10 or 20 of the weirdest ones. And they should be walked through every step of that logic and that program. And you should be told how TT arrived at that figure. because, you know, it's important to know how it works because we're tabulating tax off of it. That's what we need to do, I think, because that's what, like, the facts are. It has nothing to do with people doing their own calculations or making, like, triangle models on the internet. And so I hope, as you said, you spoke with the county auditor. I hope that's something that's in the works or that is understood at that level.
Agreed, 100%. And your analysis of coming to the credit score is, I think, somewhere familiar to the approach that Tyler Technologies used with those characteristics of your home. And I'm, that one is the market approach. So we're talking about home values right now. I think, like you're saying, and I think we hit on point about 90%. What people are upset about is that tax increase. And from a county perspective, we were able to split the market value or the tax assessment value from residential and to bifurcate that from the commercial properties. So commercial right now are paying more per assessed value.
School districts can't do that, right?
Not now. So I am hoping, and I'm thinking about taking off of work to go down on August 12th to see what kind of action we're going to get in Dover. Because I think they're going to have to, they need to fix that.
Yeah, and this goes, my spiel about the modeling and understanding what's actually happening is a separate issue from dealing with the downstream impacts. If there are working people that can't afford this amount of increase, if there are corporations that are obviously paying not enough school tax because it can't be, the school districts can't use the formula that the county uses, that has to be addressed on the back end, perhaps by the legislature. Completely different. I look at those two things as sort of different things, because again, as you said, the process could have been, well, we don't really know what the process is, but the outcome could have been generally correct. Everybody's real estate value went up way out of proportion to even like anything we've ever seen, you know, so we got to pay tax on it. But the bad effects on the back end need to be addressed by a legislature, I think.
I agree 100%. And I think the approach that the county used by splitting the rates is going to fix a lot of these concerns. And just for clarity's sake, I think that approach that a third would go down, a third would stay the same, and a third would increase, I think it is still holding, it holds true, but we're hearing the loudest voices in the room, which are everybody's taxes that went up. My taxes personally went up $650, not thousands of dollars, but if I look at that tax bill, the county portion, it really is only, it's 20%, between like 17 and 22%, I think, of your tax bill. The rest is going to school taxes. And I was YouTubing this before I got here because I was like, we can't not be the only county ever to run through this issue. And Monroe County in Pennsylvania is doing it again. Like we have to do it now, right now, every 5 years. Their last tax assessment was in 2019. Prior to that was 30 years. So, and it's very similar growing pains. And it was, I don't know if it's the playbook by Tyler Technologies, but the words like that this audit, this county alderman or whatever his title was the almost a cut and paste of what we're
did
supposed
Tyler
to say.
Do those
Tyler that? Did.
Okay.
So I think I don't think there's like a lot of players in the field. From what I hear, they're regional and yeah. Tyler Technology kind of like runs.
It's so
this
funny
area.
How this is so much like credit. Like credit bureaus on consumers are, there's three of them, and you probably have information on three of them, but they were generally regional to start, very similar. And it's also funny that, you know, I started in credit, you know, learning how to look at credit bureaus like the old way in the 90s. And so I was there when like there was these old heads that used to be like the bank manager, and you had to go, you know, if you wanted to buy a home or buy a car or whatever, you go into your bank where you banked and you talk to an officer at the bank and they'd get your information and then they'd decide whether to loan you the money or not because of, you know, they had experience doing this and that's what they did. And then at some point when I started working was this shift toward you run the thing through a computer and that tells you what you're going to loan somebody, how you're going to, what this price is going to be and all of that. And so we just don't do that anymore. Now, is one better than the other? I don't know. It's just two different ways of doing things. And we're going to have to like, because the fact is you don't go into the bank branch anymore. Whether you think it's right or wrong, we don't do that anymore. So the people that are experts in that, they're kind of obsolete. So I think we do need a shift in sort of like understanding about what it is we need to do to, and that's my other issue with this whole thing, the conspiratorial thinking and the weird sort of politics around it. You don't understand what you're doing and you're just kind of making us look bad. And I don't like that. And we need to get to the bottom of sort of the process of it. And get an understanding, that's fair enough. Like, you can get a free copy of your credit report if you want it. You can look at it. If there's something wrong, you can, you know, you can do that. But that doesn't change the fact of how the process is done. Was there any, I mean, what is your feeling, considering the meeting you had with the auditor of the county, is there a feeling that an audit can be requested and done? It can be negotiated? Is it sort of in the contract to be able to do this with Tyler, or do other sort of legal means have to sort of take place? What's the feeling at the county?
So that was only a 30-minute meeting on Tuesday. So we're just starting this process,
gotcha.
Investigating it. I think from a legislative point, I think we have to get 7 members of council to agree that there was an error. If there was an error, and like you're saying, I don't know these algorithms either. I understand that there's data points that go into it, and Mr. Wasserbach also doesn't really. He's not a assessor either. I think he's an auditor, but I don't think he knows specifically the assessment process.
Sure.
So he's working. He had before we even met, tried to call a meeting with Tyler Technologies, and I haven't been informed on that meeting as of yet. And again, that was yesterday. So he's trying to get together with them to better understand the process, and we're moving forward in that direction.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we need to understand, you know, what it is that goes into these valuations, because we can't have, you know, the bank manager from 1961 screaming on the internet that they're wrong when they've never seen a FICO score. Like, we just can't have that. So I'm hoping that there is some room where the county can at least work with Tyler and say, look, what can we work out? What information can you give us so that we have a more transparent understanding of what calculations are being done? Is it like specific aspects to a home? Is it like, how are you weighting this stuff? And again, I understand that they may very well have arguments about, you know, that's their private work product and, you know, it's a black box. That just doesn't fly here. It can't. We're taxing people on this. So there needs to be some public sort of interrogation of this and an audit. And so I'm glad at least that conversation is being had.
Yeah. And from what I understand, we did get, everybody got the letter in the mail, hopefully, that, you know, the characteristics of your home. And that was to verify this data. I did an informal appeal myself because they said my house was bigger than what it was. And when I talked to them about it, they said, oh, we used an aerial view of your home and calculated the square footage of your home based on like the depth and height and everything of your home. And I said, you're off by like over 100 square feet. So like a 10 by 10 room. My house is tiny. I calculated it at 965 square feet. They calculated it like 1100 square feet. So if that's built into that calculation, it was wrong. So, and I did an informal appeal myself. My original home value was $251,000. When I appealed it, my neighborhood is 50 houses. So I look, and 35 of them are like copy paste of these houses. The only thing different was, I think, that where the kitchen sink was located. Otherwise, this is the 80s. They're mass producing these houses. It was a Capano built home, put them up as quickly as you can. And there was a $40,000 difference between the highest valued home and the lowest valued home. And that's what I kind of want explained to me, is why was there, and it could be, and it's based on
this. Here's the thing I'll say about that, because there have been people who have made these arguments to me in particular neighborhoods. Obviously this isn't the first one I've heard. And in different places in Newcastle County, in Barron and Newark, in the Price's Corner area, and different places, even in Wilmington. And the fact of the matter is that, and everybody kind of knows this, houses sell for, like on this block, have sold for on this block have been $115,000 swings within months. Now, again, there are homes on this block that don't have central air because it's old, it's a city block. There are homes that have been expanded with decks on the roof and, big stuff outside. And there are some homes that are still the way they were built in 1912 or 1913. So, again, I get that there's going to be more of a difference in a neighborhood or a block like this than in a neighborhood like that was mostly the same. But even in a neighborhood that's mostly the same, people have pools, they have decks, they have another half bathroom, which people pay, $20,000 for an extra half bathroom. So the figures that we're talking about, we have to sort of start to internalize what we're actually talking about. That's not a huge difference for a home in a suburban neighborhood. Some home, you might see one this month go for $30,000 more, and 6 months from now you don't, just because. And people are arguing about these figures, and I don't think they're putting it in the proper perspective.
I agree with you, especially for houses built for a longer period of time. From what I understand, that like Middletown, there's that calculation that the county uses to put it back before this, back into the 1983 machine, and come up with the value at that time. And the value today is, of course, to today's value. But those homes, I don't know what the that magic number or that magic calculator was, but the houses that are 40 years old, like, or older in the sense of like city of Wilmington, I think it's harder, because like you're saying, did you get central air installed in your home? What kind of improvements have you had over 40 years, where Middletown is like the earlier, past 20 years of improvements. So they seem to not have as much of an increase. I told everybody about this third values, but I assumed that our values weren't going to change that much. And ours ended up changing the most, like city of Wilmington. And that's because of this age. Like it's the values have really increased over time.
That's the other thing that I think needs to be sort of understood. It's more of like a philosophical explanation for why the model might look the way it does. Jess actually sort of alluded to this last week, and I don't know whether all of it was recorded or not, but this idea that, over time, particular things in particular places become more desirable, or particular things just become more of a commodity. Private firms look to buy residential homes. Homes, starter homes for people who are just starting out in the world are almost impossible to come by. So the entire thought process around a residential home is completely different than it's ever been. Probably, maybe it started about 20 years ago, maybe five, give or take 5 years. And so, like, the science and the math is going to somehow illustrate that. It's going to somehow incorporate that into its logic. And again, we have to stop doing these comparisons and start thinking about this in a measured, logical way. We know that there's a housing shortage. We know all of these things as political people, but then we just think that there's five inputs to a value of a property. And we know that that's not right.
Right.
So that's all I really have to say about that. Do you want to have any other? I do want to talk about commercial properties a little bit, unless you have more that you'd like to add.
Well, I'm still learning too. And it sounds like you almost have a better grasp of the logic than I do.
It just will come as no surprise to any of our listeners. I definitely have a better grasp of it. That's actually true. Sorry, everybody.
And I learned today.
Thanks for setting up that joke.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that.
I learned today about a ratio, a common level ratio through a YouTube about like how values are examined at today. So I'm learning new things every single day. There is a Tyler report, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it.
It was sent to me. I will just say that I the Masked Singer. I just was like, I'm not looking at this.
It's like 58 pages. I'm on like page 10 trying to learn about it.
Does it explain some of like the logic of the model and some of the like the aspects or the variables that they're considering, at least? Or does it not? Is it like proprietary and you can't see anything?
They talk about like a proprietary software, CAMA Tyler's.
They're just like, oh, whatever we named our black box. They just gave their black box a name.
A name.
And they're like, hey, my black box. It's called the CMG2. We call the score the CMG2 star score. You know, they got to name the score. You always have to name the score.
Well, I will say my aide looked at it today. She loves AI. She's into AI tools. She put it into Notebook LM, which is like some kind of Google-based product. And to ask it. So it talked about how it created these multi-regression analysis model.
Well, we love linear regression, don't we, folks?
It highlighted that, and it talked about...
Regression. I'll explain what that means in a minute.
Geographic stratification and neighborhood delineation. And I do think these are big words for like the regular
person. So this is all this means, folks. It means that they're taking all of these inputs, and they're like... So the computer has decided that of all of the things you could value, of all the different little aspects of a property, this and that and the other thing and what it's sold for and all this stuff, that there's a core group of these variables that are actually drive the value. So there's like an infinite number of things you could measure, but based on the computer, they can figure out that the things that drive the value are only these 20, 30 things. And then they use those 20, 30 things to sort of give you a score and stack rank you. That's what stratification means. It just means, you know, one are in bucket one, and one are in bucket two, one are in bucket three, one are in bucket four. That's all that means. And that's what, like, linear regression means. They can see stuff go down this... I'm trying to really simplify it because it's, like, not a mathematician podcast, but... that just describes the model. That actually doesn't tell us like any. What we really need to know is the 30 variables, or at least get an idea of what they're using to make this valuation and to do the stratification and to do the linear regression. We have to know how our asset is being valuated to charge us public tax. That's the problem. And I understand proprietary models. I understand black box models. But the issue is that's what they're basically giving you a bunch of fancy like modeling and science words for how the program works. But if you don't know the inputs into it, you're not going to be able to figure out, like, because frankly, you used to know back in the day of the individual banker, you knew that if you put an extra half bathroom in your house, the value was going to go up. If you put a deck, the value was going to go up. If you put a pool, maybe it went down. I don't know. People pools are kind of like a boat. It's like a big suck, right, of expense. But whatever. Like, people used to know that. And so that's the stuff they did to you know, make their property nice. Now, there's stuff that it's making their property nice, but nobody knows what it is. And nobody's being told what it is because it's a secret. That's that really, that can't fly. That can't fly. That's my, I did say that was my last word on residential stuff. Maybe that's my last word on residential stuff, but in any case. Corporate stuff. Regardless of all of this talk about the calculation, the fact of the matter is that a commercial property is more than, you know, the number of toilets that they have or the size of it. There has to be some accounting for the revenue that's generated from there, whether it's whether it's some sort of gross receipts or something. I've even heard very smart people talk about a progressive gross receipts model where, you know, if the value of the property is $200,000, then it's like a very small amount of your gross receipts. But as you go up a tier, you get to, you know, your property's worth $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. Now we look at your gross receipts and hit you even harder. So Amazon would be paying what they owe. But what is your feeling about the divide between the commercial and the residential? I know that the county can do this calculation differently than the school boards, school districts can. But what's your general feeling about it from a county level? And do you have an expectation that the state legislature will address this in some fashion?
I do think that the state legislature are looking at a few different models. One being that, you know, we can't automatically do that 10% increase for the school tax. I think that's going to end up being debated. And then I do think that the splitting of the rates are going to, if they look, and I don't know if we're the best, but if you look at the county and what we did split it to make the burden shift a little bit less on the consumers. We did not do that in the school districts, and now we're seeing the pain points. Particularly for me, I cover Colonial School District, Red Clay School District, and Christina School District. I live in Christina, so they chose that 10% model increase, and I feel like that was not smart on our end. And I think if they could look back at it and say, what's going to happen since 40 years that we haven't done this? And that should have been a big red flag that, you know, schools being able to increase without a public vote is bad. And I, even Red Clay, I don't fully understand Red Clay either, because they had the referendum. They're saying they only did 1%, but they also calculated the referendum, and I don't know how you do that either. So it's confusing to people. And as we've seen this burden, so and if we can use Amazon Boxwood that had like a significant reduction in their taxable property taxes, that 1.5 million or 2 million shifted to us, to the consumer.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We should, the thing about not knowing about Tyler's black box, because we're using these values to charge public tax, we kind of have to know, like, if this is the way it's going to be, for example, then we want included in this some sort of gross receipts, you know, value, or some sort of other way. We need to have some sort of say in how it happens, because we can't contract out this and just say, well, that's what they came up with, we're just going to kind of tweak it on the back end. We do need to know. I frankly think we should come up with whatever the deficit is and just make Amazon pay it all. that's my fucking suggestion. You know what I mean? It's like it is weird, you know, and that's the one thing I will say in defense of some of my comrades and friends who are embarrassing me on the internet. It is weird that some of these commercial properties went down so much and they're not paying their fair share even close, and they're paying less now. I get that. You know, I don't like it. Like I said, we should get the top five companies, top five commercial companies with gross receipts, and make them fucking pay it all, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, that's not going to happen. And so just don't make us look dumb. That's all I'm asking. Anyway, is there anything else that you think can be done on the commercial side, maybe from the county, or that you would expect that the legislature look at?
Well, the modeling was different for commercial properties. They use the income approach. And as far as I am aware, they were given a document to fill out. And that is where I think the scrutiny might rely on a little bit more information, a little bit more information on how that process was done. Especially when, I mean, some companies aren't around anymore. There's a lot of vacant properties. You know, people are working from home. They don't need the square footage anymore. And that is apparent, I think, in the way that model was approached. But this, that, like, the Amazon and the Costco, that I can't even find a parking spot at Costco on Saturday, doesn't make any sense to me, like, why their property value went down.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're going to see based on my more than rudimentary understanding of how this stuff works. You know, you're going to see that. You're going to see this huge trend in, and I think Jess brought this up too, in work from home, in large office buildings being empty, especially in Wilmington. And so that phenomenon is going to be sort of captured in some way. Now, is it bad when it's sort of applied to a large plant like Amazon? Potentially. Is it bad when we're sort of relying on self-reporting about how much money you made? I'm not really keen about that. Sorry, I'm looking at the masked producer. Like, he's like they're going to talk, but they're not. She better be quiet. That's what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, I just think that information needs to be shared. It needs to be more transparent. But there's a lot of things that people are not considering at all about, like, where we are with this. And I don't think it's healthy. And I think it undermines the entire process of, like, municipal tax for, like, sewer and schools. That's my concern, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think the school portion, so we need, as a state, we need to attract businesses to help for high-paying jobs.
Well.
And how that's all intrinsic. It at the end of the day, if we don't have jobs, values are going to suffer all around, and we still need to have a basic, you know, education for our students. So we should be encouraging businesses to say, you know what, that valuation is maybe right, but we should be giving more to our. I think they should be supporting this bifurcated.
Yeah, they're
tax.
Not going to do that. Here's what you got to do. You got to take them by the neck, and you got to fucking take it out of their pocket. Because they're not your idea that you're going to make this I don't care Insight or another big money. You'll pick on Insight now because they're around the corner from here. Like, the idea that they're going to give a shit about what Warner Elementary, which is literally a 5-minute walk from there, the idea that anyone at Insight gives a shit about what's going on at Warner Elementary is we'll just call it naive, because all those people live in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
So, or wherever. I don't know why I'm picking on Westchester, but they live in where they pay way more tax. But the schools are good. You know, that's the political piece of this, is that they don't want to pay more, and they're not going to be like shame. I mean, if corporations could be shamed, we'd be in a much different position than we are today. So I think you're right that. Those exploiting labor and making tons of money here, like, you use the term like we have to make it attractive for people. I mean, how much more attractive do we have to make it? I mean, we've paid nothing for 40 years. The LLC and the corporate franchise here are, we'll just say, generous. The tax breaks and abatements that BPG gets to build those fucking ugly buildings downtown are generous. So how much more are we expected to do to make it nice for them to do? Do you know what I mean? I mean, I think that's the problem I think that people like me have about that sort of idea is like, yeah, we just have to tell them how much money we're going to take and take it. Because Pennsylvania's taken it, and New Jersey's certainly taken it. So this idea that we have to get, pardon me, but fucked every year so that people, you know, so that insight builds there or whatever, I think is kind of exacerbating the problem. I'll say that. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I hope that there is some mechanism that can be enacted to say you have to pay more because of the type of, you know, you're in business, and I'm sorry that we're not making it as attractive for you to be here as we could, but that's just the way that it is, you know. And the other thing is that what really kind of sticks with me is the idea that this whole state rests upon the principles of making everything as easy as you can for capital to make money, to exploit our corporate franchise, to exploit the labor force here, to exploit our weird sort of laws that we have that you can do this and that and the other thing. And the thing that we've gotten out of that all of those years is extremely, extremely low taxes. And so if our taxes start to go sort of towards the normal range, then I think we have to stop giving the store away on the other side. That's the argument I would make.
Yeah, and I think other states give way more money to attract builders. I don't even know what the state's press. I know there's the Delaware Prosperity Partnership. I know they give money away. I know we've made bad mistakes, like Fisker, which is where the Amazon Boxwood plant is
now. I know
now.
A guy who actually has a Fisker SUV. Yeah, I've been in it. It's a nice ride. It's a nice ride.
They were nice. I think I've heard of them. I've seen the coupes or the sedans once or twice, but
and I'm not even talking about those mistakes, because you could say, you know. The money we've given away just to Amazon and Insight and Puccini Pollen Group and all of this, like, at least they delivered on the things that they said. You know, there is a big Amazon warehouse on Boxwood Road. There is a huge Insight complex, and they saved the old John Wanamaker facade, which is nice of them to do. So, like, they delivered, but they're getting a sweetheart deal. And, you know, that's just the way that it is. I've come to accept it. But the idea that we have to, like, now do even more, or we can't sort of, like, we don't want to insult them by approaching them about more tax. I can't get behind that.
The other one I always think of is Bloom Energy, because they had promised all these jobs. And just last week or 2 weeks ago, we had a company come in to try to give a pitch to Delawareans about the big ass data center in you know, lower Delaware, and how it's going to bring jobs. And I think the jobs are temporary, and the 120 people that they say it's going to bring, and I don't know if I see that, and I don't know how we enforce it.
That's a great example. I'll give a shout out to your colleague, Kevin Kaneko. He sent me the letter that basically prohibits, and this is something Jess Grant and I talked about, the fast track for zoning for that data center in Delaware City And I'm glad you said Lower Delaware for Delaware City. I appreciate that. I like that.
Southwick.
I'm a Wilmington guy. Yeah, exactly. Fuck those Hicks. The thing that was going to get them on a fast track was this Jobs Now initiative. And then Kevin was like, yeah, we put a stop to that. That's not going to happen. But before I knew that was an official thing, thank you, Kevin, for doing that and sending me that information. Before I knew that was a thing, what we laughed about, Jess and I, was the idea that like they're bringing jobs. Yeah, they're going to build a data center. They're going to lease it probably or sell it to somebody else who is going to then contract out for janitorial, for security, for all of this other stuff. Even they told the group at the town hall in Delaware City, you know, it's the $40,000. Half of them are more than half are $40,000 a year. What's that? $15 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, we're gonna put them on a fast track to put a fucking data center that's gonna suck up the water and the utilities and fuck up Delaware City for $115 an hour jobs. I don't think so. Fuck off. Like that. This is the kind of stuff that, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned it, and I'm glad you got me to remember to thank Kevin because I almost forgot. But yeah, we really have to sort of like, but it's an easy thing to say. I mean, you're a politician. I mean, I say that with most due respect. But yeah, it's hard. I see that in this kerfuffle too with the taxes, because when people's taxes go up, that individual is going to feel like they're hard done by. And there's a political ramification to that, that you certainly feel, our friend Medina feels, you know, Christian Willauer in Wilmington, they all feel that constituent pressure because the taxes went up. And if it looks like it's not fair, that's even more political pressure.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's a way to go about it that's a little more, I don't know, directed. Sort of like professional, and I'm a little bit upset about how it's been going so far. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to give you the last word on this to talk about what you've been doing, who you've been talking to, what you think the next steps are. You did mention that you'll be down in Dover for the special session. I think what I will say is we've decided that we're not covering the special session. We're boycotting the special session. I feel like we've given you an episode and a half with experts on this, and that's enough. So we're not covering the special session. But Brandon Toole will be at the special session. And what will you be hoping to see?
Well, actually, you brought up Medina. She had emailed me and texted me today because she's everybody's coming up with something. So I think on the 12th is going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance, and I can solve this and we can solve this and mine's better than yours. So I'm curious to see what kind of infighting happens that day. I don't go down to Dover that often.
You shouldn't. That's actually extremely smart of you to do.
So I'm looking to see how they intend to resolve this issue. And I think it's really important that they're considering the people that have had 100% plus increases in their taxes. And I know I've been working with my company for 15 years. I've never seen anything greater than a 3% raise. And so I try to tell people every year I work there, I'm making less money. And I think I'm not the only person that feels that. I think a lot of people feel that. Unless if you're in a very lucrative job, you're lucky to pay your mortgage. And I do think everybody needs to pay their fair share in taxes. And I agree that corporate needs to pay their fair share in taxes too.
Well, folks, that's it. You just heard the last of this podcast's comments on this reassessment situation. I know that you're mad. I know that. Some of you have a reason to be mad. I know that I'm mad at some of you for what you're doing, because you're making us look fucking stupid. Stop doing that. And the last thing I want to mention, this is very important. And I'm going to say, before I even say this, I want to thank you, Brandon, for coming.
Yep, no problem. Appreciate it.
I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for doing, don't say anything. For the love of God, don't speak. It's so secret, you have no idea. It's incredibly secret. So this is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm very, very disturbed by this new sort of way of argument around this issue that I'm hearing from, let's be honest. Well, no, I'm hearing it from some Democratic lawmakers at different levels. Not you, by the way. You haven't done this. I'm also hearing it from some of my advocacy and activism comrades, which is very troubling, very, very troubling, that somehow this is a litmus test, and that if you explain how models work, you're somehow in bed with big tech or AI or machine learning, and you're a sellout. Stop fucking saying that. Because I tell you what, no one is going to say that to the people who it's been said to. It's not just me. Yes, it's Jessica Rain too. There's nobody with better politics than anybody listening to this knows than me and Jessica Rain. Anybody listening to this, the thousands of people who listen to this, nobody has fucking better politics than us. So I don't want to hear that we're not progressive. Yeah, you know what? We're not progressive. We're better than you. We're better than progressive. You know what we are? We're left. You know what left is? It's best.